I loved the worship set. I'm excited to be able to sing with them some more. I got to hear them during rehearsal earlier. Fantastic stuff. And then the MSU Divergent Brass Quintet was here this morning. They're pretty good too. And I really like them. And I just love this time of year where we get to connect and just hang out and really celebrate the birth of Christ. If you have your phone this morning, here's what I want you to do. Pull it out, snap a picture, because you made it to church in this weather, right? And you need to let people know, hey, we braved the elements and we're here worshiping. I'd love for you just to check in on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat and let people know that. That might be the door that opens a conversation with someone that can help them write a new chapter in their faith story. So do that. And then you can follow along with the message. Go to our app, which you can download at the Google Play Store, the Apple iTunes Store, and follow along with the sermon today, as well as stay connected to our church. So we're in this series called Christmas Lights, and I wanted to start out this morning talking about the binary state. The binary state. Now that's a fancy term which basically says that when there are two competing entities or states, if one is true, then the other absolutely cannot be. In other words, if one thing is true, it absolutely excludes the other. And probably one of the simplest binary states is true and false. If something is true, then by nature, it cannot be false, and vice versa. If something's false, by nature, it cannot be true. Another binary state, if something is at motion, then it, by definition, cannot be at rest. And when something is at rest, by definition, it cannot be in motion. They exist in a binary state, alive and dead. Also binary states, if something is alive, if something has life in it, it by definition cannot be dead. And when something is dead, by definition it has no life in it. On and off, by definition, exist in a binary state. Now, if we're honest with one another, many of us struggle with this concept of the binary state. We don't want to think that things are so black and white. Partly, I think, it's because we live in a changing world. I just think one of the reasons many of us struggle with this idea of a binary state is because of the world in which we live. Think about it this way. We live in a world where it's possible to be a little bit pregnant. Right? Years ago, you were either pregnant or you weren't pregnant, you existed, and you know, it's a binary state. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. But you talk to my friends who've experienced in vitro fertilization, IVF, maybe they've struggled, you know, they've struggled with infertility, and so they go through in vitro fertilization. And I read this week there's about a week worth of time where a woman can be a little bit pregnant. The embryo is alive and it's well, it's implanted inside of mom to be, but there's about a week before that embryo really begins to take root and grow where a woman can be a little bit pregnant. We live in a world, for example, where it used to be very clear, you're either male or you're female. Now it's not as clear, right? So we struggle with this concept of a binary state. And you know what? Filmmakers know this. Filmmakers understand this. And so they actually play around with that whole idea of the binary state to capture your attention. Think of it this way. Batman is a force for good, right? But why is it that all the movies are so dark? He's always painted with such a dark brush. Marvel Comics, they extol the virtue of a villain, Iron Man, right? Iron Man's a jerk. You would not want to hang out with Tony Stark. I know some of you are like, Iron Man, Tony Stark, what are you talking about? Stick with me, right? You would not want to hang out with Iron Man because the guy's a jerk, and yet he fights evil. That's what he does. This jerk, mean, rude guy fights evil. And then you have Captain America, all-American, loves mom, the USA, and apple pie, right? But what's he, in the last movie, if you saw, what's he doing? He's defending an assassin. We struggle with this, and filmmakers know this now. They know that we struggle with this concept of the binary state of good and evil, of light and dark, and so they actually play off of it. And some of you are actually ready to argue with me right now over whether or not Tony Stark is a good guy or a bad guy, right? That's how I know we struggle with this idea of the binary state. It's a complicated world in which we live. And the idea of absolute right and wrong, absolute truth and false, absolute on or off, really boggles the mind for most of us because we see so many shades of gray. Still, having said all that, it is difficult for us to argue that light and dark are somehow not existing in a binary state. Light and dark exist in a binary state. Light cannot be mixed with dark. Dark cannot be mixed with light. If the light is on, then darkness flees. We've already said last week, we've already said that many of us agree that the world is becoming a much darker place. We feel like the world's a darker place than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It just feels like it's a darker place. And so here's my thesis this morning. The world is either getting lighter or the world is getting darker, and you contribute to one or the other. Which is it? The world's either getting lighter, now metaphorically, right? The world's either getting lighter or the world is getting darker. You and I contribute to one or the other. Which is it? Now, we know by definition which direction Jesus took. We know that, Jesus is light defined. Wherever Jesus went, the world got brighter. In fact, we read that in the responsive reading this morning. I want to draw your words back to John 1, verses 4 and 5. John, one of Jesus' followers, wrote a biography of Jesus. Here's what he said. In Jesus was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not overcome it. There's an interesting truth here. Darkness never overcomes light. In the battle between dark and light, now speaking in terms of physics, in the battle between dark and light, dark never wins. If you go into a cave, any of you ever been spelunking? You've gone into caves? No? Okay, like three or four of us. And I guess the rest of people couldn't find their way out. But if you've ever been into a cave, and they shut the lights off, you know what complete darkness is. I mean, it's dark. But then if someone lights a candle, no matter how big the cave is, the darkness of that cave cannot snuff out the light. The light always shines through. You can carry a candle into a dark room, but it's impossible to carry dark into a light room, because light always defeats darkness. It's possible to turn on the light, but it's impossible, literally physically impossible, it's impossible to turn on the dark. Light always wins. Desmond Tutu is an archbishop in the Episcopal Church in South Africa, and he lived through apartheid, and he and his teachings were part of the big reason why apartheid was defeated, and now South Africa is a segregated and more racially equitable place. He's one of the big reasons for that. And here's what he said. He's a follower of Jesus. He said, good is stronger than evil. Love is stronger than hate. Light is stronger than darkness. Life is stronger than death. Victory is ours through him who loves us. He's talking about Jesus there. Jesus overpowered darkness, not the other way around. Jesus overpowered darkness. It's not the other way around. And that means if you're a follower of Jesus, you have left the domain of darkness, and now you have entered and dwell in the domain of light. Another of Jesus' early followers, a man named Paul, wrote a book to a church in Ephesus. That's the name of the town where the church was located. And in the book of Ephesians, Paul says this about these new Christians. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. I love this. Paul doesn't say, he doesn't say you used to be in darkness. Paul says you used to be darkness. You were darkness defined. And he says, but this is how you used to be. You're no longer that way. There's so many people that I think view Christianity as sort of a new and improved way of living. Christianity is not about new and improved. Following Jesus is not about new and improved. Following Jesus is about total and complete transformation. Paul says, you used to be dark. Darkness was inside of you. He says, but now you are light. That's a complete transformation. He says, therefore, live as children of light. And then he goes on, he says, the fruit of light, in other words, if you are a light liver, if you live in the light, right? If you live in the light, he said, there's going to be some fruit. He says that fruit is goodness, righteousness, and truth. What do those three words mean? Goodness, in this context, Paul is simply talking about doing good. It's benevolent deeds. It's the good things. You know, on Christmas Eve, we're all going to gather together. We're going to sing some songs. We're going to light some candles. But I think my favorite part of the night is when we pick up dozens of donuts, dozens of boxes of donuts, and we spread all throughout South Lansing to fire stations and police stations and hospitals, and I know even some retail workers, and we just give people donuts. We say, hey, we know you got to work on Christmas Eve. We just want you to know we appreciate it. Goodness, good deeds. And Paul says, if you're living as children of the light, you'll be known by your good deeds. He says the fruit of light is goodness. Then he says righteousness. Well, what is righteousness? Righteousness simply means right living. And in this context, it means giving God what is due him. In other words, if you're living as a child of the light, you will give God what is due him. What is due him? Our obedience. We talked about that last week. In Psalm 119, when the psalmist writes, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Over and over and over again, the psalmist talks about obeying God. We give God what is due him when we obey him. And Paul says, if you're living as a child of the light, your life will be evidenced by goodness. It'll be evidenced by righteousness. And finally, he says, we will know that you're living as a child of the light because of your truth. That the fruit of light is truth. And what Paul's talking here is not just you intellectually knowing the truth, but he's talking about you living out the truth. Not just intellectual truth, he's talking about moral truth. God desires that you and I live out the truth in our lives. And so light living means that as a Christ follower, then, you are doing good. You are living right. You are living a morally true life. But here's what I have discovered, and here's what I'm learning. Far too many Christians complain about the darkness rather than reflecting the light. I mean, don't we? I do sometimes. Man, this world isn't the way it used to be. Back when I was a kid, I do that all the time. I drive my kids nuts. I'd say things like, back when I was a kid, when there was a funeral, everybody pulled over and people get out of their car and put their hand over their heart. Right? I'm apparently the only one who complains about this stuff. You know, back when I was a kid, you didn't need to look at the cash register to figure out how to make change. You just counted it back in your head. 25, 50, 75, $1, 5 is 10, 10 is 20. Thank you. Have a nice day. Right? Far too many Christians, we complain about the darkness instead of reflecting the light. And here's what I think could transform our world. Transform certainly our lives. And as we're transformed, our world can be changed. If Christians spent as much time reflecting God's light as we do railing against the darkness, it would change our world. I just really think it would. People who follow Jesus now, we're called to live as children of the light. That light is to be evidenced by the fruit of the light, which is goodness, righteousness, truth. If we would just spend as much time reflecting the light of Christ in our lives as we do railing against the darkness, your world, my world, our world would be changed. It would be a much better place. So here's what I want to do today. I just want to give you one practice that you can implement in your life this month, this Advent season. I just want to give you one practice that you can implement that I think will help you live as a child of the light, and that I think will enable you to reflect God's light rather than rail against the darkness, and I think it'll make a difference in your world. Just one thing. Just do this one thing, and I think the world will be a better place. Paul talks about this in Philippians. We said he wrote a letter to the church in Ephesus. He also wrote a letter to the church in Philippi. And here's what he says in Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. And by the way, this is where I go from just merely talking to meddling. So keep your elbows to yourself. Don't be elbowing the person next to you, right? This is a word from the Lord now, not from Frank. Philippians 2, verse 14. Do everything without grumbling or arguing. There it is. Do everything without grumbling or arguing. In another translation, the word grumbling is translated complaining. Are there any chronic complainers in the room? Don't raise your hand. And don't point to anybody. I see you pointing over there. I said don't point. Right? Do everything without grumbling or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation, which I think sounds a lot like where we live. Then, Paul says, look at this, you will shine among them like stars in the sky. I can find 1,000 reasons to complain. And I'm going to share some of them with you right now. So, I'm in JCPenney this week to buy a pair of pants because I lost my pants. My black pants, can't find them anywhere. I don't know. So, I'm in Penny's to buy a pair of pants. How many of you go to JCPenney in the summer? Who cares? How many of you go into Christmas time, right? You go and you get in the line, and the line's huge at Christmas, right? You're in the JCPenney line, the line is huge. That's me. I'm in the line, it's Friday, the line is huge. And there are 3 cashiers, which is great. Penny's is working hard, and they're doing good, and they're moving people through the line. And then one of them just sort of disappears. I'm sure she went on break. That's okay. Retail people get breaks too. That wasn't what bothered me. What bothered me, here we go. What bothered me was the lady who came from the children's department with 322 different garments and plopped them all down on the counter. That's fine, good, she's generous, she's buying for people. And then she starts with the coupons. You know what I'm talking about. Now, some of you Penny's people, you're like, oh, yeah, the coupons. Yeah, I love the coupons. I had one pair of pants, no coupons, right? And so she worked with the cashier lady to break it up into 5 different transactions so that she could use a coupon with each one. Some of you are going, my kind of girl. And I'm fine with that. I just think that you should have to go to the back of the line after every transaction. That's all I'm saying. Right? I can find 1,000 reasons to complain. I'm driving down Interstate 94 yesterday, and I'm a good driver. I'm driving down Interstate 94, and I go to pass this truck, and so I get in the left-hand lane. I always signal. I get in the left-hand lane, I signal. And the worst thing you can do for an over-the-road truck driver is to get in front of them too quickly. You got to leave some space there, right? You got to leave some space. So I put my signal on, and I'm leaving space. And you always leave enough space, kids, just in case you're wondering, so you can see both headlights in the rearview mirror, right? So I'm leaving enough space, and this jughead behind me thinks I'm not passing fast enough. So what does he do? He just pulls in the right-hand lane, and he's going to go around me. That's when I banged it over in front of him. I'm just saying, I can find, yeah, hey, I'm just saying, I can find 1,000 reasons to complain. It's too hot. It's too cold. You didn't leave the porch light on when you left the house, Jonah. You left all the lights on in the house when you left the house, Jonah. And this whole time, right, this whole time I'm complaining, Paul is leaning in and he's whispering, don't complain. Don't complain. I hate that. But he's right. Do all things without grumbling or arguing so that you can shine like stars in a night sky that's, you know, a crooked and depraved generation. I follow one of these blogs. It's a retail person blog. So these people who work retail, they get online and they tell their stories. And they're brutal, right? I just want to read one that was posted this week. This is a woman who is working at a deli, and it's Christmas time. Yay, holiday cheer. This girl named Rachel. Rachel says, I worked on a deli counter and a man came in 10 minutes before closing time on Christmas Eve and lost his temper when he realized we had run out of pork pies. I don't even know what that is. After shouting at me for 10 minutes, he told me that I had ruined not only this Christmas for him, but every subsequent Christmas, because he would always remember the Christmas that he had to go pork pie-less. I apologized and asked if he'd like to speak to the manager, and he replied, it's not your manager that ruined my Christmases, it's you, Rachel. And then he stormed off. Now, my wife works in retail, and you speak to anyone who works in retail or customer service, and they will tell you that they have one of these stories. And depending on where they work, they may have one of these stories every single day that they punch in. And I'm telling you, that is great news for us. That's fantastic news for the church. Because whenever the sky is the darkest is when the stars shine the brightest. And if you just do this one thing this holiday season, if you just say from this day forward, from December 11th forward, I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to complain this month about the traffic. I'm not going to complain about the prices. I'm not going to complain about the crowds. I'm not going to complain about my kid leaving the lights on. I'm not going to complain, right? If that's all you do is this month, say, I'm not going to complain. I'm telling you, you will shine like a star in the night sky. There's this organization called the International Dark Sky Association. Rod probably knows all about it. The International Dark Sky Association, they certify certain places on the globe where pollution and light interference are absent. And so you can go to these places and you can view the sky. You can look at the stars, you can set up your telescope. Astronomers love these places. We actually have one here in northern Michigan somewhere. I haven't been there, but they have these places. And they have said, now the International Dark Sky Association have said, that the darkest place on the planet is in a remote wilderness area of the nation of Chile. And with all of the lights off this morning, I'd like you to see what they're talking about. Let's take a look.
Are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin. Thank you.
So I love this idea that you and I can shine like stars in the universe. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And so often, I think the reason we as Christ followers don't shine in a dark place is because we're too busy contributing to the light, to the pollution, to the noise pollution, to the light pollution, to the smog. We're too busy contributing to that. And I'm telling you, if all you'll do is over the course of the next few weeks this Christmas say, I'm not going to complain, I'm not going to argue, I'm not going to grumble, you will shine like a star. The stars always shine brightest whenever the night is the darkest. And so that's what we're called to do. We're called to shine. I freely admit that there are times when I don't do that. There are times when I struggle to do that. And that's why I need the cross. That's why I need forgiveness. That's why I need Jesus, the light of the world, to cleanse me and to inhabit me and to enable me to shine. And so we're going to celebrate what Jesus did for us. Jesus made it possible for us to shine like stars in the night sky when he came to the cross and when he overcame the power of darkness through his death and his resurrection. He overcame all of that. And because of that, you and I can live as people, as children of the light. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to sing a couple songs about the majesty and the power and the authority of God and how we're called to bow our knee to him in submission. And as we do that, man, I just encourage you to come to one of these six tables throughout the room and to share in this sacred meal, to say, you know what, Lord, forgive me for the times where I've blown it, where I've complained and argued and grumbled, where I've not been your light. Father, starting today, I want to be a person who shines like a star in the night sky. Just spend some time at the table being cleansed of your sin and receiving from him the forgiveness that his cross purchased. And then we'll continue to worship. And I'll have a few thoughts to conclude at the end. Father, help us to shine like stars in the sky. Lord, I pray that as children of the light, that when we sit down at a restaurant this month, when we go to a store, when we have family time, whatever it is we're doing, Father, that we would shine like stars in the sky. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.